Well, of all the notable battles of the U.S. Civil War, none can match the carnage of Antietam. Soldiers and civilians from Michigan played crucial roles in the battle linked by history to President Abraham Lincoln's issuance of the Emancipation Proclamation soon after. Current State Scott Pohl is here with the Michigan authors of a new book on Antietam. Who are these authors, Scott?
Well, Mark, our listeners know one of these two men, Jack Dempsey of the Michigan Historical Commission. He has led us on several tours of historic sites in Detroit for Current State. He's written Michigan at Antietam, the Wolverine State's Sacrifice on America's Bloodiest Day, with co-author Brian James Egan. They want more than for this story to be told. They're working on the erection of a monument to Michigan's contribution to the Battle of Antietam. Jack Dempsey and Brian James Egan, welcome to Current State.
Thanks very much.
Thank you for having us.
I wanted to begin with the phrase in the title, America's Bloodiest Day. Can you explain to our listeners who aren't up on their Civil War history the importance of Antietam and what you mean by America's Bloodiest Day?
Yes. Wednesday, September 17th, 1862, approximately 22,000 casualties occurred on a small hamlet or village of Sharpsburg, Maryland, right outside there. And it was the costliest day in American history with those number of casualties. And when we say a single day, it actually was about 13, 14 hours. It was within pretty much the daylight times that those number of casualties took place. Virtually an American every single second. The result of the Battle of Antietam, it allowed Abraham Lincoln, permitted him to issue the preliminary Emancipation Proclamation and answered really the question of European intervention on the side of the Confederacy.
Jack, I want to hear from you on this. The book is about Michigan's role at Antietam. Can you give us an outline of the role that Michigan played here?
Years ago, I went to the Antietam battlefield, and I asked a park ranger, is there anything having to do with Michigan here? And his response was, not much. But as it turned out, based on Brian's years of experience and our research, there are many, many Michigan stories. And Michigan soldiers, Michigan officers, Michigan civilians were instrumental in the campaign, because this unfolded over several weeks in September of 1862, and in the battle itself, and then its aftermath.
Let's maybe pick one of the Michigan personalities involved. Let's say, for instance, I know that George Custer was at Antietam.
George Custer, in this part of the war at this time, was a staff officer to the commanding general for the Union Army, which meant he would carry dispatches. He would help locate and position troops, really not part of his responsibilities to engage in actual combat. And what we were able to do with the aid of a researcher, a colleague of ours down in Washington, is actually find the original copies of dispatches that Custer sent back to headquarters, where he's talking about how he's at the front line. He's participating in combat. He's encouraging his superior officer to push forward and press the Confederates, because we can win a smashing victory if we would just hurry up and get to the point where we can muster all our forces. So it's a very interesting foretaste of Custer later in the war and, of course, after the war.
In many of his dispatches, he was supposed to take back to headquarters, and we found that a lot of them ended up back at headquarters when he sort of stayed on the front lines to participate himself, leading charges through Boonesboro, chasing the Confederate Army as they withdrew from South Mountain.
I'm not sure we've clarified for people that Custer was from Michigan, in case you're not aware of that, listeners, from, I believe, Monroe.
Correct. He was born in New Rumley, Ohio, but he made his home eventually in Monroe, married a local girl, Elizabeth Bacon, and he considered Monroe, Michigan, his hometown.
And the most imposing Custer monument statue is in downtown Monroe.
Correct.
We're talking with Brian James Egan and Jack Dempsey about Michigan at Antietam, the Wolverine State's Sacrifice on America's Bloodiest Day. Brian, can you read me a passage from Michigan at Antietam?
Yes, this is from Julia Susan Wheelock, and she writes, "The 25th, I saw for the first time the wounded as they came from the battlefield, the bloody field of Antietam. They were taken to the Patton Office Hospital. Oh, those bloody, mangled forms will long be fresh in memory. Some were able, with the help of a comrade, to crawl up the stairs, while others were carried up on stretchers. A few moans were heard, but no complaining and no loud groaning, as I expected to hear."
Well, that certainly helps take us all to Antietam. Brian, thank you.
Thank you.
There was a note in the materials I've looked at about your book, Fellows, about the role of Michigan soldiers and civilians at Antietam. And so I guess I wanted some clarification on what role civilians played at Antietam.
One of the most fascinating stories to me is the role played by someone named John J. Bagley. Years later, he became one of Michigan's governors. At the time, he was serving in a civilian capacity in what probably we would say today would be the Red Cross or the USO. He was acting for a committee that would funnel supplies that weren't furnished by the U.S. government, U.S. military, to the soldiers. So he would be close to the front to help funnel those supplies from Michigan citizens to their boys and men at the front line. And he actually was there at the battlefield and witnessed the aftermath, provided aid and comfort to soldiers who were wounded, who needed supplies, and then became part of the commission that created and developed the battlefield, which today is a national battlefield. He was Michigan's representative.
Brian James Egan, do you have other examples of civilians?
Back at the home front, so to speak, Michigan civilians had galvanized a lot of support. Just like today when we send care packages to soldiers at the front or overseas, wherever they may be deployed, that was the case in the 1860s. Early on, a lot of the Michigan civilians, of course, would support their family, their local citizenry, but the state of Michigan galvanized a larger effort, the Michigan Soldiers Aid Society, which would sort of consolidate all of these efforts throughout the state to make sure that supplies, items that the soldiers couldn't get from the military, the comforts, even medical supplies would get to the front lines. A lot of Michigan civilians were instrumental in that early in the war, throughout the entire war, and so they had played a part of that as well.
Let's get back to soldiers from Michigan. I understand that at least one unit from Michigan suffered terrible casualties at Antietam.
Yes, the 7th Michigan Infantry went into the battle that morning with about 636 soldiers accounted for on the books. And within probably an hour and a half, more than half of them couldn't be accounted for. They had entered the famous West Woods near the Dunker Church in the hopes of driving the Confederates further off the field, and they were overwhelmed by Mississippians and some Georgians that were literally coming out of the ground, as some of the accounts said. They appeared out of nowhere, and in a very short time, nearly half of the numbers fell, and it contributed to the overall federal sort of defeat at that end of, or that phase of the battle.
The two of you have co-founded the Michigan Civil War Association, if I'm understanding it correctly, and that part of the mission of this new association is to see that an appropriate marker of some sort is erected at Antietam to note the contributions of people from Michigan there. Am I right about that?
Absolutely. Michigan does not have a monument on the Antietam National Battlefield. Why, we're not certain about that. They do. There are mentions of Michigan in the interpretive plaques, but they do not have a monument.
Do other states have a monument there?
Yes, most of the other states, even some Confederate states, have monuments at Antietam and other national parks as well. But at Antietam, Michigan is not represented by a monument, and we hope to correct that.
Michigan does have monuments at other Civil War battlefields, Gettysburg, Shiloh, Vicksburg. Perhaps the most poignant one at Andersonville, where Michigan soldiers were imprisoned as POWs. But as Brian said, there's been no Michigan monument ever erected at Antietam, and we feel privileged and blessed to have been given the opportunity on the Michigan Historical Commission to lead the effort to erect the first ever monument for Michigan's participation in this campaign, which resulted in the Emancipation Proclamation.
So what exactly is being done to raise money for that effort?
One of the things is this book, which we co-wrote, which just appeared on August 31st. All the proceeds from our part of it are going to that effort. The Michigan Civil War Association is a 501c3. Tax-deductible donations can be made to it, and all of that money will be used to erecting the monument. And we hope to do that within, obviously, a number of months. It'll take a while to raise the money and get everything done, but hopefully in the near future.
Can you describe the monument you have in mind?
In working with the National Park Service, they helped determine the location, which Jack and I are completely thrilled with, the location where the 7th Michigan actually crossed a turnpike, a road, and entered the fray. And we hope to keep it within the scale and scope of other monuments of that level throughout the battlefield. So we're hoping it consists of marble or stone, granite. We hope to have a bronze life-size figure on the top, more or less representing Colonel Norman Hall, who was leading the 7th Michigan. But since this is our one opportunity to represent Michigan, it will be a monument to all Michigan units that participated during the battle. However, it will be located where the 7th Michigan actually fought.
Jack Dempsey and Brian James Egan are the co-authors of Michigan at Antietam, The Wolverine State's Sacrifice on America's Bloodiest Day. Jack Dempsey and Brian James Egan, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For Current State, I'm Scott Pohl.
And the music is, of course, Ashokan Farewell by Jay Unger, heard extensively in the Ken Burns documentary, The Civil War, even though it does not date back to the U.S. Civil War. Unger wrote the piece in 1982. Coming up on Current State, the Snyder administration is calling on all state agencies to coordinate their efforts to improve job access for persons with disabilities. We'll talk about the Employment First program with two local nonprofit executives who work to build that workplace culture for persons with disabilities. Plus, the field goal so nice he made it twice, Michael Geiger's biggest ever kick. Plus, how the Spartans pulled off a stunning win without star quarterback Connor Cook. That and more after the break on Current State.